Psychedelic science is exploding and we talk to people at the forefront. So cut through the noise, converse with the vanguard. This is Mind Manifest.
Hi there and welcome to the Mind Manifest podcast. I'm your host, Niall Campbell. Thanks for joining me, and this will be an explanation as to why there hasn't been a lot of podcasts recently, and to explain why this is the last one of the Mind Manifest podcast series, the end. I'm wrapping up this project and it will soon become apparent why that is. So I just want to open with a bit of a, this is a very personal one, with a disclosure about something that has happened to me, that psychedelics helped me to become aware of and come to terms with. And when I was 6 years old, I was raped by a doctor whose care I was in whilst in on a hospital ward. This was an absolutely devastating and hate-filled event that was far too much for my mind to even comprehend at that time, and it was buried. And it was only several years ago when I legally took some psychedelics that this came flooding back in Technicolor, and I doubted it for a long time, but I was able to corroborate the event through dates and hospital records and just too much bodily and actual evidence to doubt it any longer. And I've consulted with a lot of people, a lot of experts, and I wish I could say I doubt that this happened, because I know that people who've had childhood trauma of this nature go through that. We all do, I think, to blame ourselves, chastise ourselves and mistrust ourselves. But it absolutely certainly happened. And yeah, it was a devastating effect on my life. It was like a pernicious traumatic brain injury that was something that I had to manage, a darkness that I didn't understand and had to manage my entire life. I've lived a very joyful and hopefully quite successful life in spite of it, but it's exactly that. Now is the time to understand that you're only as sick as your secrets. And I'll outline why I was sort of giving marching orders on a trip that I have to do this. I have to talk about it publicly. So hopefully when I explain the story, it will ground me. And, you know, I need to check that my ego isn't at play, because there now is a culture, unfortunately, where self-disclosure and talking about your own mental health, I'm not super comfortable with just how performative it has become, and how it's actually almost the opposite problem of people being stigmatized and not wanting to talk about it. It's, you can't swing a cat without hearing someone trauma vomit on you. So I want to be gentle with myself, allow myself the space to talk about it, but hopefully you'll get the sense that this isn't something which, you know, Irish men are traditionally very, very comfortable doing. So even though I'm quite extroverted, this is not, a long time coming. I had several goals at trying to record this, you know, properly with all the right equipment. I had somebody interview me. I even booked a hotel in the city to go and be, you know, use that as a studio to get a bit of headspace. And, I talked about it and did the podcast, and it's very hard to talk about, and they were far too heavy. And I thought, no, I need to do a bit more work. So hopefully you can tell from my tone, I'm not saying this is available to people once they start to open up about it. I am able to talk about this openly. It's something which was devastating that did happen to me, but I've put an awful lot of work in, and I'm going to talk about the ways in which what's been useful for me to get to the point where I'm not dissociated while I'm talking about it, that A, I'm aware that it happened to me, and B, that not only am I aware, but it doesn't completely ruin my day, discombobulate my system when I talk about it. And the first couple of times I talked about this, I was uncontrollably crying, understandably. It was suppressed for over 30 years, and then when it all came out, it was not pretty, but I've It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do, to get to the point where I can decide to press record and have this be in the public domain. It's not about how many people, how many ears or eyeballs it gets. It's just about knowing that I'm not ashamed of it because I was 6 years old. So if nothing else happens from me outlining this in the public domain, is if just one person hears that and knows they're not alone. And yeah, we have to be accountable for things we do as adults. But when you're a child and some hate-filled person tries to annihilate you through their violence or neglect or sexual predatory actions, you're completely innocent of that, as am I. I would afford this to my psychotherapy clients. I will be my first and last client. So know you're not alone and that it wasn't your fault. That is worth the price of admission. If one person hears that and internalizes it even a little bit, then, you know, my job is done. So yeah, to talk a little bit about how this came to the fore, I took some time to off from work a few years ago and we went to Holland to do this legally and had a series of psychedelic events, and this information just came back to me as clear as day, like hyper realistic memories, if that makes sense. I don't want to get into the, oh, that's not how memory works. I've been able to corroborate these events through hospital records and all sorts of other, you know, real world events, and this definitely happened. And it's astonishing to see that you can, as a child, it's of course, it's our adaptive mechanism to just completely apportion overwhelming experiences like this and keep them completely inaccessible to adult consciousness, you know, but it lives in the body. And so I've had to re-experience the abuse physically many times, and that's the toll it takes on the body when you do that, and you do it voluntarily, is enormous. You know, I've done hard things physically. I'm not saying this to flex, but I've run marathons and I've climbed, you know, alpine mountains. There is nothing I've done that is remotely as exhausting as choosing to go back into these experiences in order to process them. And they say people who take psychedelics are scared and those who haven't are petrified. So once this floodgates were opened, anytime I've decided to take it, it's been with the greatest of care, the greatest of preparation. And this is anyone who's listening to this who would accuse me in any shape or form of this being some sort of reckless advertisement for the utility of psychedelics in the treatment of serious trauma needs to understand that that is not what I'm doing. Psychedelics are indispensable for certain people, and they certainly were for me. They're essential, they're not sufficient, and I'm going to talk a little bit about other modalities, other things which were just as helpful and helped me to get to the point I'm at now, which is very stable, very solid. Wouldn't say on the other side, but at the point where I'm comfortable enough to have this be in the public domain and move forward and have it be a terrible thing that happened to me, but for it to live in the past. So before we get on to the different things that I've done, and that's really where my focus is at, it's actually not going to be psychedelics, which is why I'm wrapping this up. I do need to talk about how the trips were indispensable and revealed this to me, and a little bit of what happened. So I re-experienced with hyper clarity the events and realized how they were trapped in my body and were making me sick. And yeah, it was unspeakably frightening. Anyone who has children of that age, 6, understands how easily frightened they are by things, but they're at this difficult cusp where they're still a baby in a way, so have that fragility and wide openness to the world, but also have a developing sense of how big and bad the world can actually be. So this just obliterated my capacity to see the world as a, for a period of time, to see the world as anything but a hostile place. And I've worked incredibly hard, and my natural joyful nature has been in a constant sort of arm wrestle, like epic arm wrestle with that. But the joy is now starting to win and will do so. And psychedelics were crucial to turn the tide. Crucial. So I do not really actually want this to be a deep trip report. I might open up a little bit more about that later. It's not that I don't want to share that with people, or I'm not comfortable with it being in the public domain, but I do think there is something to be said for just going slow and understanding that you don't need to get into the nitty-gritty details. That can become a bit of voyeurism for other people. So suffice to say, I was raped on a hospital ward by a deeply underwhelming doctor, if you can claim that title. And with hindsight, that explained why, like so many traumatized people, I tried to be accepted into the world that traumatized me. So when I first went to university, I studied medicine. I'm not a terrible fit. I could certainly do it. But I have a totally different spirit. And what I wish have been shown through MDMA especially was that I have the spirit, a sensitive soul who has the spirit of an artist. And I'm not ashamed of that, because the world needs artists. Art is the antidote to despair. So it is the central facet of proper psychotherapy. It's the central facet of healing. Artists are deeper healers than doctors will ever be. And it's not a foot race, but if it was, it's your average Joe versus Usain Bolt. Beyond injection, ingestion, and incision, which is what physical medicine is involved in and functions at the level of the synapse, it has nothing to say at the level of the soul. I don't want to throw rocks, but if you're a sensitive guy and you were abused, there's every chance that it was because the person who abused you had completely repressed the essential part of their nature that you were manifesting, which delights everyone around you and is attractive to people, not least of all women, that they couldn't bear your existence and had to try and annihilate you. It's the Cain and Abel story. Listen to Jordan Peterson ramble on about this. The most expedient way for Cain to try and shake his fist at the sky and curse God is to take away what is most precious to him, and that is children. So there's a type of abuse often exacted on young boys by older men in the priesthood, in any institution where underwhelming men can just put their head down and bum up and make their way. Priesthood, military, school systems, health professions, anything like that. It's rampant, because they will get in their own repression and lack of self-actualization makes them hateful, imploding creatures, and then they can't cope with that possession of their own evil, and they just try and push it, give it to small children. And that is so toxic to the body. So I feel I was shown and had to re-experience all of that, and it was just so harrowing. And I've never been more exhausted. Never after anything I've done than the days after these experiences, which I had to voluntarily embark upon. So like I say, this is not an advertisement for psychedelics. Those who haven't taken psychedelics are frightened, and those who have are petrified for good reason. So it's a bit ironic, but consult your primary physician before embarking. Just don't go see mine. That's a bit of gallows humour there. But look, I want to everyone to understand that I pursued a persona, and I'm now 40, and that's done. It won me a lot of fine prizes, but it makes total sense to me now. I was abused in a world where being a health professional was like a demigod status in my community. Of course I tried to pursue that. To prove, to legitimise myself extrinsically. But now the job, the rest of my life, is just to cultivate that sense intrinsically, to be comfortable in my own skin and to inspire other people how to embrace their own sensitivity and vulnerability and know that that's the real pathway to true success and have a bit of fun in the interim. So the other psychedelic experience I have to draw attention to, which is why I'm doing this, which was even more harrowing probably than the rest, was when I took ayahuasca. I wouldn't advise it. It was unspeakably horrible. But nonetheless, essential. Because what happens, you listen to other podcasts to get the ins and outs of all this, but take it, runs through you. It's an obscenely powerful life force that just burns away all the parts of you that you don't need anymore. And at the sort of apex of that, there was intense, in the middle of the night, there was intense, beautiful live music being played, and I was offered the opportunity to purge this, and that's what the vomiting was for me. I heard someone just to my right purge into a bucket, and I was just so compassionately relieved for them, because it was a woman, and there's just, I hadn't experienced this before, but it's not nausea inducing when for me at least, when you hear that people purging, really letting go of something, it's like hearing the slick, this hit the bottom of the bucket. There's, you know, I heard this woman's sexual abuse hit the bottom of her bucket. And I was so pleased for her because it was out of her body. And then something the gravity got turned up and it was like 4G. I was just crushed on the ground and said, if you can bring yourself up and vomit, you have the choice now. You can purge this and you'll forget about it and it will leave your body. All the pain, all the suffering. And for anyone who's been abused by a hateful person, especially, I think, as a child, especially if it violates your sexual orientation, I gotta think that's an extra worse. Maybe it's not, like, there's no good way to be abused, but I'm just naturally straight, so there's something about your first sexual experience not only being wildly premature, totally non-consensual, incredibly violent, and also in violation of your own sexual orientation, but all that together is, it's like lightning coming through just normal house electrics. It's, you're frazzled for a long time afterwards, but all the suffering that invokes, I've worked with people, it is like being electrocuted. To just have that, to have the opportunity to have that all taken away was, and then forget, and then be free of it, was like manna from heaven. And then as the nausea rose, I was given a choice, and it said, if you sit up now straight and you bear this weight, and the gravity just kept turning up and up and up, it was like being at the bottom of the sea. If you can sit up now and take this and carry this, then you will have to purge time and time again, and you'll have to do it in public. You will have to talk about this. You'll have to be open about it. You'll have to experience the shame. You'll have to experience all the things which come from putting this out into the public domain. And you'll continue to suffer at times. It won't leave your body. You'll have to work through it. But you can purge into the bucket, or you can purge into the microphone. And I was given that choice. And there was no waiting. It was, I could do either. And vanity and ego and messianic calling aside, I was given that choice. And I think it's open to a lot of people. And there was an elderly man directly across from me. He wasn't that elderly, but he was like an elder in the circle at this ayahuasca ceremony. Never met him, never will. He was like an iron rod, just straight up and down. And I just thought, I want to be like that. And I just kept saying, I can take it. I can take it. I've taken it this far. And I just knew I had to help other people. And then the rest of the night was just, it wasn't like that then. So, okay, here's your first task. You get to feel good. I just felt the sheer weight of what suffering must be in just my people. Because this happens all over the world and has happened throughout time, but I can't be the only one. I'm not the only one from my people. So, I never really heard that many voices talking to me saying, you can come out the other side of this. You can reintegrate into the village. You can be of use. You can be an elder in your community. You don't have to carry the shame of another man who couldn't cope with the weight of the world, who couldn't carry and sublimate and overcome his own Lucifer and tried to put his dark seed in you. And I know how heavy that is, but that's why the gravity was so, it was like 4G. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do was sit up straight and the nausea completely receded, and then just this intense heaviness came on my body and it said, right, here's your marching orders. Talk about it openly. Stay grounded. And devote the rest of your life to getting rid of as much shame in your silent brothers as you can. And it was that moment that I knew that what he had tried to tell me my whole life, that I was nothing, couldn't have been further from the truth. Just like you. You're worth more than you know. So, I realized through that ayahuasca ceremony that the ceremony would never be over. There was no resolution to it. It's my job to not be a martyr, but be a beacon. So I've acted on the marching orders, as I call them, when I get the message from psychedelics. And then you don't need to have that many experiences, because if you really listen and pay attention to what you're sort of ostensibly told to do, I think you realize that these are massive projects and you don't get to choose the altar. You just get to choose whether or not you worship. So this next idea that has come to me might seem on the surface a bit silly. Not silly, just quite light. But I'm going to be starting a new project and there will be a fire break between Mind Manifest and it for that very reason. So this information is in the public domain through Mind Manifest podcast. But think of it like the foundations of what I'm about to do, and I'll talk about it in a minute. And there's a fire break between those two things. I am wanting to spread as much joy and self-belief amongst men who doubt themselves as is physically possible. I got a sense during the ayahuasca journey of just amongst my people, and by my people I mean Irish men throughout the ages, and especially in modern times, of just how much violence and abuse has been exacted upon us by men who were supposed to look after us, who couldn't cope, who took the wrong road and abused the most precious things on the face of the earth, namely children, who have become a sort of unspoken cancer in our communities, and who have robbed us as a nation of our brightest stars, really. So I've lost my thread a wee bit, which sometimes happens when you're talking about this, but I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of speaking about this publicly. And like I say, I was given a choice. And it wasn't it wasn't a nice choice, but I've chosen, and it's not going to be as heavy as this going forward. So I'm 40. I'm happily married. I have a beautiful son. You know, all the rest of it. Old friends, nice house, all the rest of it. And that is a type of very important success. You know, objective, comfort, achievement, all the rest of it. But I now understand that true success true success is being who you really are, becoming your authentic self. Newsflash, new age people are right. And I function as a bit of a boundary walker in that I chat to very Apollonian people, you know, who like golf and road cycling and science and institutions and all the rest of it. And also I have friends who, you know, believe in some absolutely batshit crazy stuff and are very esoteric and open to whatever may be. And yeah, success is being your authentic self. So sometimes the most traumatized amongst us teach the people who, the happy wanderers, what the best way is. Like, the drunkard at 20 is maybe teaching his friends at 40 how to be teetotal. You know, how to reduce their alcohol. Because sometimes if you have to go to the very edge, you have to bring back information which is useful to just, you know, the general population. And so when, at a very early age, you're violently diverted from who you're meant to be by a preternaturally jealous and possessed abuser, if you survive that and don't leave the face of the earth, you learn to realize that what's true for you still of being your authentic self is just as true for everybody else. And you stop making assumptions that you can judge someone at face value about what they're going through, because that has been the privilege of being a psychotherapist. People who look like they're on paper have nothing to worry about, have a lot to worry about. We are all in this together. Again, these all seem twee. I believe them in my bone marrow. Marrow deep is my belief in the fact that there is no them, there's only us, and true success looks like being your authentic self. So the first half, or hopefully less than half of my life after that event, of course I oriented myself around trying to be what I thought would make me legitimate in the eyes of people like my abusers, namely to be, you know, a health professional and all the rest of it. But really what I am is an artist, a sensitive, joyful, open to the world, creative. So I'm an artist who doesn't have a craft, and my next project is about leaning into creativity as hard as I possibly can. And another thing I was shown in ayahuasca was just the sense of just the degree of suffering that one misguided soul abusing children can cause. Because it's often, it's rarely opportunistic, it's often systematic. And I don't want to get into the nitty gritty of what happened to me. That's, it's not the time or place, but suffice to say, it becomes fairly obvious that this was the actions of a fairly prolific predator. So I was given the sense of just how much sadness this and suffering this one man, underwhelming man, has put into the world. And that was my marching order, was with a sense of urgency, try and invert that and put as much joy and peace and love and happiness into the world as he tried to take out of it. To restore the balance. And that's my responsibility. Not to be a martyr to it, but to say, okay, how much damage did my abuser do? Okay, let me see if I can redress the balance in the opposite direction. So I've got to get busy, and I need help and support to do that. So there's no more Dr. Niall Campbell, as if he was ever a real person. It was a persona to protect myself, and I thank him for his service, but he's in retirement now. My next project, which is the opening conversational gambit of moving closer towards my authentic self and walking the walk. I'm a psychotherapist and I advocate this for my clients. So I'm not a hypocrite. I'm going to do this for myself. I will never stop doing this for myself. NiallLearnsHowToDoStuff.com. Check that out. N-I-A-L-L LearnsHowToDoStuff.com. I have no experience with social media. I've avoided it like the plague. Not that interested, but I understand I will need to leverage it to spread my message, which is very simple. If you do not leverage your curiosity and humility to lean into things that you are afraid of but interested in, you will not be able to experience your true self in any meaningful way. Your true self will be hidden from you, and therefore true success, which is commensurate with being your authentic self, will be totally hidden from you as well. So I am going to make a laundry list of things that I am frightened of, but curious about, and learn how to do them. This is a very practical way for me to piece by piece come back to terms with the fact that I am a very capable, very competent, very valid man. Every time I do a little something, whether it's learn how to file your business activity statements properly, or do a kickflip on a skateboard, or learn how to cook a particular dish properly, or learn how to build a cabinet, it doesn't matter. Every time I take something which I am frightened of, and especially if it seems to me that something that if I can't do, it's a bit emasculating, and I do it, that's how I'll get my revenge on my abuser. Not to define myself against them, but to say to you, if you want to, inverted quotes, win, and you've been seriously hurt by someone in your past, do not live in the past, live in the future. You do not win by dying, you win by living, and I mean truly living. So I will be taking a laundry list of things, and you can go to the website or the Instagram, NiallLearnsHowToDoStuff.com. Niall Learns How to Do Stuff on Instagram, and see my exploits. And my plan is very simple. There is a manifesto there about how it functions in therapy, and I'm open to seeing people to help them create their own laundry lists and do this for themselves. So there's a psychotherapeutic backdrop to this, which makes total sense. Then the other thing is, as I learn how to do these things, which will be fun, life-affirming, useful, silly, sensible things, just whatever I want to do, to find out who I am, to develop my competence, to have a bit of fun along the way, there will be opportunities aplenty for sponsorship. Because if your brand will help me to face a fear and get the job done, I want to hear from you. So the first one that I'm going to do is learn how to hold my breath. for 2 minutes. There's a particular reason why I want to learn how to do this as this starting thing I'm doing, is because the abuse happened in a bath and I panic, understandably, when I'm in an uncontrollable a situation which I don't think I can control underwater. So the first, I'm going to, what they call eat the frog, I'm going to start with a big fear. I'm petrified of being in a underwater situation where I can't breathe. A lot of people with trauma history struggle with this. What comes to mind now is Tim Ferriss, for example, who's been very open and was not trying to, you know, leverage some a massive audience, but his podcast where he disclosed his own trauma was very helpful for me to see the benefit, and I'm sort of paying it forward. It, in my small way, it helped me to see how it could be done, and it actually activated something within me to be more conscious of what had happened to me. It was his experience of taking psychedelics, with hyper clarity remembering abuse which he had completely shut off from his body, and then just become a sort of master at self-punishment, resonated deeply with me and helped me to explore this more thoroughly. So to him, just from not a fanboy but a fellow lost boy, thank you. But with hindsight, I realized that I saw him do a TED talk once a long time ago about how he struggled to swim. And I struggled to swim, and I the more I've worked with traumatized people, the more I've realized that there must be something to do with children holding their breath through existential fear, or if it does happen around water, which is often the case, was for me. But something about being in water, period, is hard for me. And I've been leaning into that and teaching myself how to swim. And I'm pretty athletic, but I've never been able to swim, which is telling. So the first NileLearnsHowToDoStuff.com project is to go to a breathhold workshop with a gem of a guy that I've met. And I'll be making some content around that. I will be promoting his services to everyone, because it's a breathhold workshop in Perth here. And the guy offers a lot of other different things. And this is a bit of me putting this flag in the sand, so I have to release this content after I stop recording, before I do that, or it won't make sense. Because I'm still conscious I might not, you know, I might get cold feet, but I want this to be in the public domain now. It's been long enough. And I'm outlining my new project in a incoherent way, because anyone who's disclosed this type of information knows it really scrambles the way you think. But done is better than perfect. So if you go to the website, please spread this message. Spread it wide. It's not a vanity project. It's more me feeling that I want to create a vehicle where I am able to just be a happy person out in the world, trying new things and thriving, and knowing that that's what true success looks like in relation to moving past trauma of this nature. So I'll be doing the breathhold workshop. It's a big deal for me. It's hard for anyone to hold their breath for that length of time, but for me, I'll have to face my panic. But I'm now at the point where I think I can do it. And with the guidance and mentorship of people who actually know what they're doing, that's it. So my focus will be on areas to do with DIY. Funny enough, because I've always felt when I've started into projects, a voice in my head related to the trauma that emasculates me and says, you can't do anything like this. That's for real men. It's just not true. So I'm just going to prove that wrong every single time by doing little projects. And I'll need tradies and businesses who can support me to do that. Another area is food and drink, because I've learned through exploring things which add vibrancy to life, joie de vivre, that's a fantastic way to move past trauma. Not everything is talk therapy, just living the good life. Fitness, I mean, exercise and general physiological support of the right nature are probably the biggest healers of all. And so I have a few fun projects that I want to do to keep getting healthier. And then just music and art, because like I said, that will be the ultimate goal, is to be who I truly am, which is an artist. And it's only pretentious if you're pretending. So my goal is to, over time, to learn the crafts that I, to let my light shine, because that's what I was shown just the last little bit of the psychedelic experience showed me, that the reason that this particular doctor had singled me out, and I can remember with distinct clarity, was that it was because when I was on the ward, and there have been other instances as well, which I won't talk about here, but where, whenever you're a delightful little kid who's very charismatic and not a show off, but, you know, I see it in my own son, just lights up a room, that is deeply infuriating and enraging to a certain type of man. Small-minded, resentful, no other word for it, possessed little man, and they have to try and annihilate you. So many artists have been diverted from their true path and don't. The doubts are too loud in their head because they think they're worthless because something terrible has happened to them. Someone has tried to shut them down early on, and I refuse to go to my grave having not given my artistic offering. Now, it doesn't need to be good. It might not be. I might be very mediocre. That's okay. It doesn't. There's a line that just gets me from the David Brent movie, of all things. And my fear is that I'll just be somebody like that. You know, the Ricky Gervais character is where he's try hard, trying to be like a pop star. I'm certainly not trying to be a pop star, but I'm just trying to live artistically. And my ultimate goal would be to, I'll just say it, I'd love to work hard as I did at jobs I hated to make a good living. I'd love to work that hard at something I love, which is art, and see how good I could get, and see would it be possible to provide for my family through that means. Imagine that. But there's a line from the Ricky Gervais movie where the character David Brent at the end says, when he's gone on this ridiculous, you know, sacked in his office job to try and make it or something as a musician, and he says, I could live with not succeeding, I just couldn't live with not trying. And that's the way I feel. That gets me, that line. So Niall learns how to do stuff.com, and Niall learns how to do stuff on Instagram. I'm afraid I won't see it through, but I'll need help. Specifically, I'll be hunting hard for sponsorship. Go to the list of laundry list if you can help. I don't want your sympathy or your pity. I want to grow an audience so that I can get eyeballs, so that I can do more cool stuff, so that I can place sponsors and we can scratch each other's backs here, where I can spread my message of joy and hope and growth beyond post-traumatic growth. And if your good or service can help and you want to help, I'm all ears. Get in touch. I'm willing to look silly or look like a fool if it gets through to people that there's life after this. And I want to be a living proof of that. I already am. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about before I leave you is what I call the silent brotherhood. My day job is as a psychotherapist. I specialize in a few different areas, actually not trauma so much anymore. I certainly have done a lot of work in that area, but I now more focus on high performance and the psychology of excellence without it being self-punishment. So you can check out the website. All the information is on the website as well. And that's my livelihood, so that's not free. But what I do want to set up, which I think should be free and perennially so, is a circle, a group, a brotherhood called the Silent Brotherhood. Similar in shape and scope and structure to the AA. Because whenever I first came back to Perth after living in London and being more aware that I had this trauma history and trying to get some sort of a fellowship and solidarity, because it makes you feel so alone. there was nothing on offer that I could just rock up to. And I've heard people, because I've worked with, I've worked in as a therapist in rehabs, and you know, a lot of clients with substance abuse who've come out the other side, and they will tell me, those who go to AA, is every now and again, or different support groups, sometimes someone will come along who's at a loss, who doesn't have a bona fide addiction history, but has had terrible trauma, and they just needed to tell someone. And I'm like, of course they don't kick them out. They say, look, some, you know, here are some other resources, but this really isn't the group for you. But there's an unmet need. And I've experienced that firsthand by seeing how, what a paucity of offering there is for people in my city to anonymously come and just be with other men, high-functioning men who make a pledge that they have never promulgated their abuse on other people, especially women and children. That is essential. This is not a group for people who have not been able to cope with what was put into them, but have been able to bear the weight of it, but still struggle. There's nothing available, as far as I can see, unless I'm missing something. So I want to create the first chapter of what I call the Silent Brotherhood. It will be, I don't know how frequently, but it will be on an ongoing basis. And if it's just, for the first while, it's just me sitting in a room on my own for an hour, that's fine. Word will catch on, or word will spread. If you have a sexual or physical trauma history as a man, and you've been functioning but not thriving, and you don't feel you have a good support network to tell other people, and you can promise in front of your other silent brothers that, to the best of your knowledge, you've never exacted this on anybody else, which does happen. Hurt people hurt people. Then I want to create a group that's free, where you can just open up and then go back out to your life. And when you're ready, if you ever need to, know that there are degrees of disclosure. You certainly don't need to talk on a podcast and put it in the public domain, but if you feel you need to do that, that's fine. But it certainly wouldn't have been possible for me to do this without the support of a group. And it wasn't specifically for this, and it wasn't free. It certainly wasn't free. But it was deeply helpful, and I thought, okay, how can I be of service? So I will be looking for venues. Those will be on the website. It will be very discreet. But I think it's important that I start that as well. So I'll leave you with this. This is the end of my offering as a podcast host and all the rest of this persona in the psychedelic space. There is so much more to life than the worst things that ever happened to you. And if you feel like the room that you're in is pretty much identical to the room where it happened, then you need to seek help. If you're circling the plug hole of thinking that you don't matter and the world would be better off without you, and it's a loveless place, then you'll have to go to your grave a liar, because I love you. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. No light to Mary. Thank you for listening. Please take care of yourself. I nearly said take care of yourself and each other. Which would be completing the podcast on a Jerry Springer sign off. I think we can be a wee bit more profound than that. I can do nothing but be a fool. But my choice was really given to me. My marching orders were to be a fool or a holy fool, and I choose the latter. job, your most important job, is to be who you really are. And understand that the people who hurt you didn't want that to happen because they didn't do it themselves. So the best way to inoculate your spirit, your body, your soul, your being from passing this on is to join me as I try and become who the fuck I really am. I have no idea, but I'm looking forward to finding out. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you on the other side.